Bro Diallo back again with another episode of the Bro Diallo Show. Thanks for tuning in. It is February 6th in the year of your Lord 2017. February 6th, we know what day that is, right? That is Bob Marley's birthday. Yes. Yes, brothers and sisters. The cultural, musical, and African icon. Robert Nestor Marley was born on this day. You know, so you know we got to bump the Bob Marley tracks all day today for when we play. Sorry, I was a moment or two late going live, but I hope you hear me. If you can't hear me properly, please shoot me a message or whatever because, you know, my headphones is untrustworthy. I got some Obama headphones. They look right. They look like they together. They appear to be doing what they supposed to do. You know, they're black. But when I depend on them most, they don't come through for me. So I got some Obama headphones that are making Obama promise. But anyway, ain't no complaining today. We have to be irie because this is Bob Marley Day. Bob Marley birthday. You know, born on this day, February 6th, 1945. Man, that's not that long ago. I mean, really, Bob Marley should still be with us. But again, like they said, Bob Marley, Del Jones said that they gave Bob Marley instant cancer, add water and stir. Because Bob Marley was not just an artist, not just an icon, not just a Rasta Reed man, as, you know, the hipsters and white people, white liberals like to portray him. Bob Marley was a true revolutionary. Frantz Fanon and Chinwezu and many other African theorists, anti-colonial struggle, said that an artist, when a people are under oppression, when a people are in crisis, then it is not simply the arena of artists to make something beautiful, to make something inspirational, to make something to be cherished, or just simply to represent or sustain the culture. It is the duties of the artist to radicalize the culture, you know, to arm. The culture becomes a weapon. Or as the late, great, legendary Fela said, music is the weapon. So Bob Marley understood this. Many of our artists don't. You know, you have a lot of our artists, oh, I make music for all people. You know, or as, who was it? Michael Jordan said, Republicans buy sneakers too. Well, these artists too, their very existence, no matter how talented you are, if you don't have the audience, if you don't have the ears, the eyes, the emotional attachment from the people, you know, who would Michael Jackson be if he was just moonwalking in the shower singing into his bar of soap before he went to work his job? What would Michael Jackson have done if he wasn't a singer? I like to imagine that sometime. For some reason, like if Prince wasn't, and this is just in my head, if Prince wasn't the musical genius that he was, I always imagine him working at a Taco Bell. You know, and he's got this little dude in a Taco Bell hat and managing. I don't think by any means he wouldn't be on the grill. I'm not sure what they have at Taco Bell. Everything comes packaged and sealed. I don't know. But like, I can't imagine him like putting together. I think he would manage. I think he would rise to the highest height at his local Taco Bell now. He wouldn't just be a rank and file. But I always imagine Prince working at Taco Bell with a thin, pencil thin mustache. And I always think with all these women who swoon over the man as he's on stage in assless chaps, if he was in a McDonald's uniform, same man, same voice, same stature, you know, so it's just something about that stage. But anyway, I don't know. Sorry, let's get back. I don't have my organic green fair trade tea with me this morning because I left it right on the counter. But we're going to trot on because this is Bob Marley Day. You know, And what the Rastaman say? When times get hard, when the struggle will come, you just have to trot on. Trot on. So I will trot on in my personal self-inflicted struggle today. But anyway, back to my point. The artist, it's not a lot of these artists who are just like, I'm just an artist. Or I perform for all people. Or my music is universal. No, that's, I mean, in a time of relative stability, in a time of relative prosperity, you can just be an artist. If you want to just sit and sculpture statues out of banana skins, whatever, you know, the your talent, your evolutionary, your God imbued talent is. But when you're in a time of crisis, if you are not on the side of the people, on the side of the oppressed, then you are by default on the side of the oppressor. If you're not using your art, but that's anybody in anything. Where, I mean, it's kind of clear, like if you're a marksman, if you're a gunman, and if you're fighting for the Nazis, or you're fighting for the resistance, it's kind of clear where you stand. Or if you're a good German citizen saying, hey, I just do my job, I pay my taxes, and I don't get into politics, then you're on the side of the Nazis under the Third Reich. Because if you're a law-abiding citizen and on a lawful empire, then that makes you culpable in the crimes of the empire. That's why Dick Gregory said when Berlin was bombed and the Nazis started their retreat, the Luftwaffe, the SS were all in retreat, the bombs that were dropped on Berlin didn't say for bad Germans only. Everybody get it. Which kind of leads me into my story. But before I get into the topic of the day, I definitely want to give a shout out to Bob Marley, because Bob Marley put up funding. He bought weapons for anti-colonial guerrilla struggles. He put food in the hands and mouths and resources and opportunity in the hands. They said at the time, at the height of his fame, there were literally hundreds of families employed or sustained by the Marley wealth. Now, Rita Marley had her own idea. She kind of tightened up the reins. You know, I guess, you know, she was like, no, we're going to join the Jamaican oligarchy, the third world kleptocrats. You know, we're going to put Bob Marley on Ford Motor vehicles. We're going to put Bob Marley music in a Budweiser commercial. And on the soles of mass-produced sweatshop sneakers. I mean, so the Marley legacy. If you only know Bob Marley in his post-mortem, if you only know his music, his Rasta, and his weed, then you don't know Bob Marley. Bob Marley was a political engine. And that's why many people from the 80s, many of the people who were close to him suspected that he was assassinated. Obama was fine. Look at many of Obama's opposition, like Hugo Chavez is probably the most popular, but there were many others that get these weird cancers. You know, and then you go and read, because we already know. Now, they'll tell us, you know, Vladimir Putin, he used, you know, chemicals, poisoning, certain alpha particles, and dioxin. He used certain, you know, hard-to-trace chemicals and radioactive materials to assassinate his enemies. You know, so it'd be an assassination, but it looks like you died of some just unfortunate chronic illness. So they said Bob Marley got that instant cancer. And by Dale Jones said that was the same cancer, same thing they did to Martha Mitchell and Jack Ruby. Instant water, add water, instant cancer, add water and stir. But we're not even going to get it, because I want to celebrate Bob Marley. I don't want to get into the doldrums. I don't want to get into what some of you simple-minded people will call conspiracy theories. You know, that's a CIA term, you know, to quell doubt and to quell critical examination of mainstream positions. You think you're being so smart, you're being so mainstream, you're being so responsible when you say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. A conspiracy is anything that's carried out, planned out by more than one person, you know. Anything that is planned out. Now, it normally suggests a nefarious thing. But if two crackheads got a plan to steal Twinkies from the local gas station, That's a conspiracy. It's a low-level conspiracy. But if he's like, you walk in, you distract the person at the counter, then I'm going to get the Twinkies and head out the door while you make a ruckus, you know, over by the soda fountain. That was a conspiracy. You know, and every day, prosecutors all over the United States are locking up black men and women and children and our elders on conspiracy. Drug conspiracy. There's more black folks in jail for conspiracy than almost any other crime. Many of these drug dealers, they don't often catch them red-handed because a lot of the top drug dealers, they don't, you know, once you get to a certain level, you don't touch the product. So they get you on conspiracy to distribute. But we act like conspiracy is such an absurd notion when we point the conspiracy finger at wealthy white men. When we point this finger of conspiracy at what's called the deep state, the FBI, CIA, NSA, ATF, IRS. Well, you know, we when you point the conspiracy figure at people of authority, and that's why I like Trump. Trump is showing that there's a lot of idiots in power. There's a lot of idiots with a lot of money. There's a lot of people who are not hardworking, brilliant people who have the moral fiber and fortitude to be long-suffering and very responsible with their money. We have the totally obscene notion of what rich people are and how they got rich and how they stay rich. I had somebody I actually consider a friend, but he's an anarcho-capitalist. He believes you can be free. You can free humanity through capitalism, you know, and they have this weird notion that wealth requires more. It's like opposite. Everything is upside down. That the very thing that enslaved, you can take a system that at its core says that you have to compete against and view other people who have this common needs, common desires, common interest, common vulnerabilities as you, the people you could take that are common to you and exist in utter opposition and life and death competition against them. You know, where you can take a social species like the human beings, the primates, we have come to call ourselves human because we have opposable thumbs and language. So we're somehow superior primates. I don't think we've really proven the superiority of ourselves versus other great primates or even lesser primates. Because I don't know of any other primates that poison their water supply deliberately for fictional fiat currency that has no intrinsic value. I don't know of any other primates that destroy real world things for fictional made up things like money or stock positions or credit scores. You know, I don't know of any other primates that worship fictional beings while they devalue real world flesh and blood beings. And I don't care whether you're talking about God or multi or limited liability corporations. Corporations are people, my friend, as Mitt Romney said. So, yeah, we've got all the other primates beat on technology. You know, but I don't know whether we're superior because chimpanzees have to get a old block of wood or a stone and bash each other to death while we're able to kill each other with satellites, but we still act like, and so I wish if we really are more evolved or created superior to other primates, I wish we'd prove it in other ways than trying to figure out how high-tech means of being savages. Because I think that's all we've managed to do, to show that we can be more high-tech in our savagery than the lesser primates. But anyway, shout out to Bob Marley. You know, I'm going to be playing some Bob Marley. You know, one more thing. My favorite poem, and I only heard it once. I only heard this poem once, and it's one of my favorite poems. And I couldn't, when I heard it, this was before the days of Google. This is in primitive times when you actually had to look things up in encyclopedias or microfiche or actually walk up to other human beings and ask them questions. You couldn't just meet somebody like, oh, she's nice. Let me go online and look up her criminal history, you know, and her health records. But I was at this poetry reading, and there was a feature poet. I was in Brooklyn, and she was all the way from Oakland, and she wrote this poem called All Bob, No Marley. And it was about basically about cultural appropriation. And so that, you know, like black, white Rastas, white hip hop folks, you know, basically white people that appropriate black culture. And she says, you know, you're all Bob, but there's no Marley in you. Because, you know, and I had written a poem before that called, you know, because I was at this club and in this Roots Reggae's club, and all the white people were like, they were playing SZA, they were playing Joseph Hill, you know, they were playing just Capleton. People don't know, say I'm a friend. They was playing Zebra. They were playing all these dope dancehall reggae artists, Roots artists. And every white person in the thing kept yelling at the DJ booth, why don't you play some Bob Marley? Bob Marley, where's Bob Marley? And I'm like, why? And so then I wrote, I have to find this poem, you know, and because it's called Whitey Make Me Hate Bob Marley. You know, because, and I don't know why they have such affinity for him. I mean, there's several other artists that could use their money. Buju Banton, for one. And why the hell didn't Barack Obama pardon Buju Banton? I mean, Buju Banton. All right, shout out. But I heard that Buju Banton has independently secured a reduction in his sentence. So, good on you, Buju. I don't think we're going to see... what's the other guy that bleached his skin? I was never really a fan of him. Vibes Cartel. Them I bleach all them skin. Them I bleach. I think that's why he ain't getting out of jail. It's because you just so blatantly I bleach all your skin. Anyway, this is Bro Diallo Show. Q4 Radio. AM 1680. The number to call in. I'll start putting the number on the live feed and posting it. 312-985-7834. And yes, if you have tried to call before, I am just now clicking on the little bouncing phone icon. Sorry. But anyway, one of the things I wanted to talk about today, and this is a deeper issue, and I didn't mean to talk about this today, because what I really, a show, I think I'll do it tomorrow, is I want to talk about the artificial apocalypse. Because capitalism, and I ain't going to say I'm not going to be arbitrary. White people, Western culture, nobody else, not even the Chinese, because that's what U.S. industrials love to talk about, China and India, because China and India, as they exist today, are byproducts of Western imperialism. So even the white man is to blame for China, and the white man is blamed for India. Now, some white people want to pat them, look at these engines of production. Look at these industrial nations that come up from the muck of backwardness of the dark ages and have come into the light of capitalism and industry. So some white people would be proud of that. You know. But I'm just giving credit where credit is due. You could call it blaming, finger pointing, or not taking responsibility for ourselves, whatever you Uncle Tom's call that. I call it just telling the truth and shaming the devil. But it's all white folks' fault. And the bottom line is the life-sustaining capacity of the planet Earth has been greatly compromised, and it will, and on trajectory to be completely eliminated. The life-sustaining capacity of the Earth is compromised, and we're on a rapid path to having the life-sustaining capacity of the Earth completely eliminated. And we got to go into details about how that is true, because I know some people like, oh, the Lord, God is still in control. And the God ain't no more. Listen, you can't depend on God to save you from the artificial apocalypse any more than you can depend on Spider-Man or Superman to save you from a burning skyscraper. You know. And you know doggone well, if you walk somebody and say, "Ooh, I smell smoke. Oh, Lord Jesus, it's a fair." And you try to get your roommate, your spouse, your homie, or somebody say, "Hey, we got to get out of here. I smell smoke." And they turn over to you and say, "Oh, please." You know Superman is going to fly through the air with the greatest of ease and save us. So just relax. He'll be here at any moment. Now, you're either going to drag them out or you're going to leave them there in their own stupidity. And that's how I feel about people that think God is going to fix this, or God is going to judge this, or God is going to, you know, of his, you know, it's the same thing. We either gonna have to drag them kicking and streaming into the solutions or leave them to bun. And as Kitty Owadu said, you know, humanity is on divergent evolutionary paths, and we're the first beings, the first specimens that are able to consciously and deliberately direct our evolution. We can live clean so that our works may be seen. We can eat right. We can engage each other as human beings as opposed to being human resources. We can build with each other instead of trying to out one-up each other. We can do that. So this is interrelated, but, you know, that's for another show. Today I want to talk about this immigration issue. Y'all black folks is bugging out. And this immigration issue has really upset me. And here's why. It's because of black people. And we've got some black people who identify as conscious. And to me, I always assume consciousness means you were humane. That consciousness meant, you know, you were not just at a higher level thinker, but you were more empathetic. You looked at everything in a historical and human context. But we got, you know, Amun-Ra, Bay-El-Hotep, God-Killer, Honky-Beater, X, online sounding like Bubba. You know, I had, and I'm not going to name this sister, but she apparently, people, I just, you know, I'm not too up. I have to admit, I'm not too up on the modern day contemporary scholars. And I know people will probably be like, well, you think you won. I never claimed to be. None of that. I'm just a family man who's trying to, you know, navigate this system and fulfill my obligation for life, the wonderful life that I've lived, and fulfill my obligation to humanity by, you know, building what's right and attacking to tear down what's wrong. Pretty simple to me. It's not none of these. It's not that complex for me. I'm a relatively simple man, but I'm not too. But every now and then, and plus I can't keep up with them. But I'm not even gonna say the name. But you got this person, and here's the thing about a lot of these black people. They were a lot of these so-called conscious black people. For example, like, what's his name? The People Scholar. Financial Liberation and Financial Literacy. What's his name? Boyce Watkins. And his on-again, off-again ally, Yvette. I said it. They try to pass off surrender as triumph. Or if they don't pass off surrender as triumph, they pass off surrender as practical and pragmatic. And when you're dealing with an omnicidal enemy, an omnicidal system, and omnicide means kill everything. You don't just kill your enemies. You don't just kill your subordinates. You want to kill everything, down to the very bacterial life forms. I mean, literally, this system is killing things that haven't even been recognized as being alive yet. There are literally species of animals, species of plants, and even species of microscopic organisms that are being destroyed that haven't even been quote-unquote discovered yet, that have been named and classified yet. That's how destructive this system is. And some black people said, well, we have to figure out how we can succeed within this system. Invest in the stock market, buy real estate, secure degrees in STEM, and try to project and think out, what jobs will the children of Bill Gates need me to do in order to pay me to so that I can be worthy enough to live in this country without starving to death? They really think trying to figure out not how to burn the plantation to the ground, but how do I get the chance to work on the cotton gin? See, that's technology. You go, we used to have to separate the cotton by hand, but now we got the cotton gin. So you got slaves in the in the slave shacks trying to go over the manual so that they can be the one most worthy to work the cotton gin. So if you get promoted to the cotton gin, then you can look down at those still picking cotton by hand and say, see, you should strive and work hard as me, because the best we got is what they give us. And we just have to make ourselves worthy of what they're willing to give us. And that is a surrender. Now, a lot of black folks take that position. A lot of black folks take that position, but most black people who take that position don't try to pass it off as conscious. They don't try to pass it off as triumphant. Or they don't even try to argue that it's rational. They was like, look, I'm just trying to get these nachos and this plastic cheese so I can eat and these 300 million chickens just to chop off their wings and eat this contaminated, chemical infested, radiated, toxic salmonella chicken wings and enjoy me some Super Bowl, man. I ain't trying to be Malcolm X. Hell, I ain't even trying to be Martin Luther King. I'm trying to be Rufus R. Jones, who kept his head down until it was safe to come back up. Most of y'all is Rufus. Most of y'all ain't Malcolms. Most of y'all ain't Kings. Most of y'all is Rufuses. And hey, it's a place in the world for Rufus. Rufus is like, I just get with the program. I had to sit in the back of the bus. One day I showed up. They said, you don't have to sit in the back of the bus no more. You can come up front. Well, therefore, thank you, sir. What now? The vast majority, as Trump is in office and they say, okay, back again to the bus. And, oh, by the way, nigga is okay again. We're going to be calling you niggas and you have to go back to, well, some of us is going to fight. Some of us is going to throw hands and pull out pistols. Some of us is going to pray, sit in, march, die in and write, you know, wonderful letters from the Birmingham jail. But the vast majority of us, just going to the back of the bus and wait for either the pistols or the prayers and wait for us to fix it. And then they're going to, and here's my thing now, conscious, revolutionary, militant black people. Don't carry these Rufuses anymore. I ain't saying don't fight against them, but don't carry them either. You know, that it's just because this is what happened with the civil rights movement. First, they said, well, this movement is what can't be stopped. Black folks are going to have their bond. They're going to have their day. This system is not going to be sustained. You know, as Dale Jones said, the only reason they created a new world order because the old world order didn't work anymore. So they said, we can no longer repress black people, oppress black people, .. the way we used to. See, black people see the first half of those statements. It's always a ... in those instances. So when the white masses were like, we can no longer enslave Africans, ... the way we used to. And then so they went from slavery to Jim Crow. And then they said, well, now we can no longer oppress and segregate black people, ... the way we used to. We think we don't never follow what comes after the short pause. But what they said was, okay, we can't do it the way. We're going to have to make concessions. They didn't burn down 200 plus cities. They've disgraced our nation. We're in a life and death struggle against communism. There's some alternative systems. There's another world superpower and emerging regional powers. We're going around the world saying, hey, reject the communist, reject the nationalist, reject nationalism. And just come on board with us. But then, you know, you had black, brown, Asian people all over the world saying, yo, look how you do your niggas. I mean, I'm sorry, how you do your black citizens. See, you gonna bring that here? We don't want that. So they were like, listen, it's bad PR. Communism is coming. We're looking bad on the global stage. And the United States is basically, I can't, see, this is like, but we didn't sucked up all the oil. The first Saudi Arabia was in Texas. Remember, y'all go ask your grandmas about this show called Dallas. The first oil boom came out of the United States, and they sipped it dry. There's a movie, There Will Be Blood, that kind of chronicles some characters. But, I mean, that's a historical fiction. But it's like, look, we didn't mine almost all the coal we can find. We didn't mine all the uranium. We didn't cut all of our own forests. Now we want to go abroad and eat up other people's sphere, like the cultural, economic, cancer, parasite that we are. But when we show up at the borders, because now they have these things called cameras and telegraph machines, we can't just go murder and then say we didn't murder. We can't just go rape and then say we didn't rape, because then there's proof. So we got to come up with neocolonialism, because we can't colonize other nations, .. the way we used to. But anyway, the black liberation struggle was a part of all this. The anti-colonial struggle, the non-alignment movement, you know, the decolonization struggle, you know, and the Latin American uprising, guerrilla struggles, communist left-wing fifth columnists. It was a mess. So black folks, and so Europeans was like, you know, okay, as evil as we are, we will be rational at the same time, and we got to deal with this internal problem because we're very vulnerable to these black folks. We're very vulnerable. So what they said was, you got the pistols and the prayers. You got people that was ready to shoot for freedom. You got people that was ready to pray, sit in, integrate. So they said, we can't take them all out. Because what we're going to, if we start killing them all, what's going to happen is the black conservatives are going to have no choice but to unite with the black militants, the far left, and we could have a full-fledged civil war on our hands. And they could go to the communists, the Cubans, and we already seen when Latin America and in Southeast Asia, that guerrilla warfare, you know, we don't want the blacks to go to urban guerrilla warfare, and if they unite, so we got to keep them separated and got to keep them divided. So they said, we'll only target one segment of the black community with naked repression, and that's the militants, the Panthers, the black liberation armies, you know, the black guerrilla family. So they targeted. But then they said, what we're going to do is we're going to naked repression for one segment, and then we're going to capture and integrate another, which is the pistol wielders, they crushed. And most black people cheered that, oh, no, you know, ain't nobody supposed to be killing, carrying no gun and killing nobody unless you're a white man. Now, the white man has bestowed upon himself the authority to kill people for political, economic, social, military, any interest he wants. The white man has the right to kill. That's why you will have a woman that could wake up in the morning and see her son walk out the door with a red bandana with a gun, and she'll be like, oh, Lord, this is so wrong, right? But then you'll have, but then you'll have that same mother will see her son in army fatigues. And he ain't just walking off with a pistol. He going off to join the people with a nuclear bomb. And she was like, oh, thank you, God, for keeping my son on the right track. I mean, there's a disconnect. Either you for violence or you ain't violent. But anyway. So they decided, okay, we're going to integrate the prey. The people who went to the Bible, we're going to bring them in. We're going to fund them. We're going to polish them. We're going to legitimize them, give them a Nobel Peace Prize. And the gun toters we will completely crush because we can't crush all blacks. We want to crush all of y'all, even Rufus. So you got King, Malcolm, Rufuses. Every black man, woman, and child falls into that category. So we're going to crush the Malcolms. We're going to capture the Kings. But then after they did that, they sat down and wrote civil rights legislations, affirmative actions, set-asides, grants. They just gave, but they didn't even give that to the Kings. They gave that to the Rufuses. They were like, even though we have fully captured and fully integrated the people who went to the Bibles, the people who sat down for freedom, as opposed to the people who stood up for freedom, they killed the people who stood up for freedom. They captured the people and integrated the people who sat down, who did the sit down for freedom. But they gave all of the concessions. They gave all of the benefits. They didn't even give them to the Kings and the Abernathys and the integrationists. They gave all of the power and concessions to the Rufuses. And so Malcolms died. Kings got their heads split open so that Rufuses could stand up and take all the benefits. And that is why every single one of the civil rights concessions that we won was totally snatched away from us. We've lost every single one of them. All of the integrationist gains have been lost up until and including the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. And we already know we've been and lost affirmative action before we even got good on it. Because as part of a little addendum to the affirmative action thing was like, well, white women are a oppressed group too. And Hispanics and everybody else. You know. And we had lost the freaking 14th, 15th, and 13th Amendment. Black folks have three amendments that were written for us specifically. You know, it was foo, like, it was futu. I mean, for us by, it wasn't fubu, for us by them. It was for us from them. So the abolitionist legislators wrote three amendments into the Constitution that were strictly for black folks. But because they just couldn't, like modern politicians, you know how politicians can't say poor anymore. They have to say middle. I work for the middle class. As if they're, and most people who believe they're middle class because they have a degree and they have a house and a mortgage and they have a title and a job and a certificate or something, they think you're not middle class. You're poor. You know, you might be middle class in terms of you drink Starbucks instead of Folgers. You know, you use, you know, credit cards instead of food stamps. So you might have sedity, uppity, or this word is back in play, bougie sentiments and tastes because you've been to a poetry reading once or twice. You know, you go see little Lauryn Hill instead of little Yachty in concert. You might think, but you're poor. But they can't say the poor. And now politicians can't even say black. They say people who look like me. People who look like us are people of color. You can't even say. I, in fact, went to the alderman race. I went to an alderman race where there was a seat vacated. Our alderman for my fourth ward decided, to hell with this public service stuff. I'm going to work for Airbnb, racist-ass discriminatory Airbnb. So our alderman, I'm not even going to say his name because I don't want to spit on the microphone, was like middle finger to everybody who voted for me. To go and represent their interests. I'm going to represent corporate interests. As if he wasn't representing corporate interests while he was an alderman. But I guess cut out the middleman. You know, so I don't even have to give speeches like I care about the man. So anyway, of course, the political machine handpicked a new candidate, whom also I will not name. And there was only one. There were, one, two, three, four, five. There were five candidates running for this one seat. Only one of the five candidates, just one of the five candidates said the word black people, said the word poor people. Only one of them didn't speak in these around about into people who look like us. He was like the black community. A lot of the other people said my community, and then I'm supposed to assume that they're, when they say my community, I'm part of their community where they say my, knowing doggone well, their neighbor is probably not black. Bunch of lawyers. And half, most of them were lawyers. And I've got nothing against lawyers. Shoot, Lord knows. I've been rescued. A couple of lawyers played Captain Save-A-Ho for me. I was the hoe in front of some judge. So, you know, shout out to lawyers, warrior lawyers. As Khalid Muhammad said, I got nothing but love for them warrior lawyers. Middle finger to the prosecutors, though. How dare you be a black prosecutor? But anyway, let me come all the way back, because guess what? Believe it or not, I'm supposed to be talking about immigration. But I was going to build off of immigration. But let me just wrap up the one point. If you are a Malcolm, or if you are an X, or if you are a King, stop carrying the Rufuses. Tell the Rufuses that they got to play their part. No more saving black people. Say, I will not do a damn thing to save you, but I'm willing to work with you to save us. You know? And a lot of these black people like to play, I'm going to save my community, instead of working with the community. They quote, air quotes, work for the community, even though the community don't pay you. You're working for who pays you to work on behalf of us in their interest. And that's why, you know, so many of these saviors, that's why every community, every poor black ravaged community got a million freaking people that's going to save them. Millions. I'm like, man, we got all these people who call for unity and divine. We got all these good and capable people who are calling for this thing that we never get. Why? Because they don't work for us. I don't work for black people. I will work with black people. And I ain't even pro-black. Because to be pro-black means I got to be pro a lot of black folks that are anti the rest of us. So I'm going to be smart. I'm not just going to represent and martyr myself for the masses. You know, I'm not going to, because even before some of our revolutionary icons lived long enough to kind of tell us, we messed up, y'all. We should be able to see for ourselves that they messed up. But Huey P. Newton said, we fought for a long time to get diversity on the OPD, Oakland Police Department. And so finally, the city government was like, fine, we're going to do a hiring initiative, and we're going to put more black people on the OPD. And guess what the first thing them black officers from the OPD did? The first thing they did, put on one sock, put on another sock, put on their uniform, put on the badge, put on the gun, and then maybe like the eighth thing they did was jump in there, go to South Oakland, go to the black community, and start busting black heads. And there's just a new, brand new report. I don't even want to pull it up because they didn't quote me in the report, but I've been saying this for the longest because I read Disciplined Minds. That statistically, black officers are no less violent, no less brutal, and no more sensitive to the needs and oppression of black people than white their white counterparts. I knew the moment his name's been on my mind because I knew I had to give him credit for this. Oh my goodness! Steve Coakley, there he is. Told us 20, 30 years ago that we can't trust the oath takers. When you become a professional and you have to take an oath to secure your degree, your certificate, to secure your job, these oath takers take the oath that they took to represent the government, the military, the police force, more than their biological, historical, cultural, economic, class loyalty to the rest of us. And it was demonstrated. And how many more times, just today, Rahm Emanuel announced that he wants to hire 1,000 new police officers by the end of 2018. And of course, economics being as they were, he already, when he made the announcements, he got in, as of this morning it was announced, 1,600 applications. And the Democratic machine that runs City Hall is all doing the Holy Ghost dance because almost half of those applicants are women. They've had more minority applicants in this hiring cycle than any other time in the police department. And you know we got Eddie Johnson, Officer Step, Mr. Fetchit, who said that in his 30-plus years in the police department, I ain't never seen nothing no akin to racism. I don't know where y'all getting that from now. You know. So, you know, thank you, Black Lives Matter, for getting us a black superintendent of the Chicago Police Department. You know, it's kind of hard to see, you know, but, you know, it does our heart good, you know, when that boot's on your neck. You know, a black man ordered that boot to get there. It's like I said, you know, people in Yemen, Somalia, Libya, and throughout the world were celebrating. Hey, see that drone bomb coming at our heads to kill us all, kill my family? That was ordered by a black man. I am so proud. You see that black boot on my neck there? That man works for his boss is a black man. Yay. So they're diversifying the Chicago Police Department. And that was announced today. And I'm sure, but my point being that they are finding, you read books like Medical Apartheid, Acres of Skin, that black people that get in positions of authority and status within a system of oppression become oppressors. They begin to act like and carry out the culture of the institution. And they abandon the culture of their community. And here's the scary part about it. Those same cops that are see their white counterparts murder black people, set up black people, plant drugs on black people, and they participate in that, they come to Kwanzaa. They'll come to the African Arts Festival. They'll come to the barbecue. They'll be in the dance. They'll be stepping with us. They'll be doing the shuffle in the bus stop. They're among us. And then and that's what they call like cognitive dissonance or the duality. And they'll swear they're being positive. They'll swear that they're representing us. And that goes all the way back to where I said a lot of these black people think surrender is practical, if not triumphant. Look how well I have adopted the ways, the values, and submitted to the agendas of the oppressor. you know, and your thick neck busting out of that. You don't even look right in a shirt and tie. You know you eating all that swine, got that pack of hot dogs on the back of your neck, and you got on a tie all tight. You know you need to go put on a damn dashiki so them neck rolls can breathe. You don't even look right trying to be like the white man, but you do it anyway. And so anyway, yes, John, overseers. I mean, it ain't like the white man's ever been starved to get black folks for black folks. Man, where can I find some black people that'll abandon their own people's interests and serve mine? Since the days of the house nigga. So my ultimate point is a lot of black folks is repping our enemies. But then I guess I'll have to come back after the break and talk about black folks, because this immigration issue is very telling. But my ultimate point, I'm going to go ahead and give the spoiler. My ultimate point is, I'm going to talk about it, and then I'm going to say this again, because, you know, propaganda, repetition is the essence of propaganda. And yes, this show is pro-African liberationist militant propaganda. Really, it's really not propaganda, because I don't really have the apparatus and structure. And that's why, okay, and this, let me say this first. Rabbit holes. Today is the rabbit hole day. I don't have my green tea. I don't have my infused little caffeine boost. So, you know, this is what y'all get when I forget my stuff. But go to Diallokenyatta.com. You see there? There ain't been no shows. I'm still in November updating the archives. You go to Diallokenyatta. I need help. And then since I know y'all don't want to get up at 5:30 in the morning and come to this janky studio, you can go there and make a donation. Shout out to, I got two people to give me $25. That's $50 for 8 months worth of work. And I'm happy to do it. I feel like I'm big time. Hollywood, red carpet. And I appreciate it. And more so than that, I really need it. So go to Diallokenyatta.com if you appreciate the show. If you want to sustain the show, help the show, go to Diallo.com, make the donation so that we can not only continue. You know, I was just talking about my co-host, my official co-host of convenience, you know, because this fool is like, well, I got to take care of my kids and family. And I'm like, what? What about the show? It's like, but my children. But I'm like, the show, you know. And he didn't know, because he thought, because, you know, Dr. Umar and all these other black nationalists, they like to talk about the family, focus on the family. Oops, I didn't even curse when I played the curse bell. So I got a curse in the bank now, so I can curse. But, you know, he didn't know that was just, you're supposed to talk about, the, you know, that's rhetoric. He doesn't understand. He keeps taking, King Dita, you're taking that stuff literal. Black woman is God. You know, we got to build and strengthen and support our family. That's rhetoric, man. You supposed to say that, but then go do what you want to do when you want to do it the way you do it. Like Dr. Umar said, give lip service to it. More than enough. Talk back family. Can't even, you know, talking about single. Anyway, my co-host and I were just talking at his daughter's birthday party. And we were talking about taking it to the streets, getting some cameras, getting up in these faces of these corrupt politicians. When these Dr. Umars come to town, you know, some of that, you know, they call it, you know, dyed-in-the-wool journalism, reporting, exposés, you know, taking the show on the road, you know. A lot of things to do, but we need support and resources. And we need the cold, hard cash, and we just need to know people want this. Because, you know, Lord, last thing we want to do is give people something they don't want, or to sustain something that's not valued. But anyway, I'm going to give you the ultimate conclusion that I was going to draw, because I don't want to not get to the conclusion. So I'm just going to start giving the conclusions and then giving my support for my conclusion after I give the conclusion. The ultimate conclusion is black people, we don't understand that we don't have to pick from the options other people give us. And with the immigration issue, you're going to find even militant Negroes on there talking about, so you pro-immigration or you anti-immigration? Or you pro the Muslim ban or you anti the Muslim ban? And all these black folks think they so sophisticated and so slick talking about, oh, I don't care about no Muslims. I mean, yo, follow my blog. You know, every time I go online, I don't even be wanting to look because, you know, when I go on my blog, when people send me messages or interactions, there's a little number up in the corner. It's kind of like Facebook, but it's gray instead of red. There's a little number. I don't even want to because I know it's somebody calling me an anti-Semite or calling me a Islamophobe or calling me a militant atheist who hates Christianity, an anti-demonic antichrist type thing. I don't know what you call an anti. Christians are so powerful. They got the nukes. There ain't even no blanket word for being anti, I guess, Christianophobe. So, you know, nobody's going to confuse me of being a friend to the Arab or being a friend to the allies. I stay pushing, you know. I was hoping that the black Muslim community should really be the ones pushing the chattel enslavement of our African people, the Islamic occupation of North Africa. But right is right. I say it because it's right. You know, but I also will say that, you know, the occupation of Zionists is genocidal, unjust. So you can, so I can have conclusions and options that are beyond what's on the table. And that's the problem with us. When white folks got in a tizzy and was like, we're going to be a colony or we're going to be an independent nation. And Crispus Attucks was like, which of these two options that white folks put on the table do I pick from? Instead of coming up with his own damn options. When white folks got in a position, they say, we're going to fight against the Huns or we're going to be protectionist in World War I. And a bunch of black folks ran up and enlist. Same thing with World War II. Do we support the British, the French, the Americans who've been committing a global holocaust all over the world? Or what you gonna do, support Hitler? Like, I don't support America. You on the side of Hitler? No, I don't support Mr. Hitler either. I don't, because they're both murderous, genocidal, maniac monsters. The only reason Hitler is a monster is because he did within Europe what his so-called enemies have been doing outside of Europe. And the only reason, because if Germany hadn't, I mean, and then nobody attacked Germany when they killed off the Hereros. When they mass slaughtered the Hereros, Germany was down. But when they started killing white folks, that's what, and so black folks always in the nuclear arms race. And are you a communist or a capitalist? Neither. Screw them both. Why can't we come up with our own independent positions based on, but you got black folks, conscious black folks, talking about, I support Trump's Muslim ban. And these Muslims come, and these immigrants come to our community and open businesses, blah, 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 blah. I had somebody tell me, you know, they come here, take our jobs, get your jobs. I'm like, how are you got an El, a Bay, a Ma'at, and a Hotep in your name, all jumbled together? You got the most hyphenated name I ever seen. And you on here sounding like Bubba. Dicker jobs. And I have to explain to people, the immigrants ain't taking nothing. They're being given those jobs. And do you? And I just say, you go somewhere, you go to a wealthy white man and say, hey, wealthy white man, I need me a job. Like, well, Roscoe, I was on my way to give you this here job, but Mexican banditos jumped out of the alleyway when I was pulling out of my gated community. Pulling my Mercedes out into the gated community, and Mexicans jumped out. They put a gun to my head, went in my pocket, and took your job away from me. It was on my way to give it to you. That's not how freaking jobs work. You know that. That's not how they work. Jobs are given. And jobs, even when you're given the job, it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the employer. So when you're allowed to do the job, that's why they can go into your computer. You don't have freedom of speech. You don't have freedom of movement. They can dictate how you dress, when you get to pee and poop, and when you get to go eat, and how for long you got to pee, poop, and eat. You lose all of your citizenship's rights when you enter a job because the job is not yours. And an employer has wide range of what he can do to you, what he can allow you to do, and what he can disallow you to do. So a job is not a dignified thing. It's nothing anybody should fight for. Not to say you should be willing to settle. Hey, you got to eat. Because in this advanced, highly technological society, it's basically barbarism. If you don't pay the man, he comes with weapons and throws you into the street. So with all these smartphones, all this high-tech technology is no different than the old landlords of feudal Europe. Pay your dues or you get thrown out. You get brutalized. A man with a gun will come and get you. So you either, but if you go along with the game, we can all pretend to be civilized. You can pretend like it, but all said and done, if you don't do what the feudal lord says, then somebody's going to come and F you up. And so we really haven't. No one's going to come and debate with you the merits of paying your mortgage or paying your rent. No one's going to write a multi-page peer-reviewed journal article about how and why you should pay your rent. If you don't pay your rent, they throw you into the street. And if you don't get out, when they say get out, they will come and incarcerate you, brutalize you, or even kill you. So all this technology we got piled up here is nothing more than icing on a cake of primitive, savage brutality. So the Mexicans or the immigrants are not taking jobs from anybody. They're being given the jobs. And why is the God of jobs, as Scheherazade Ali said, the white man is the God of jobs. He giveth and he takes away. So why has the God of jobs deemed Ukrainian, Syrian, Palestinian, Honduran, Mexican immigrants more worthy of jobs than Rufus Pico train? Why? Because you have the burden of U.S. citizenship. And since you have the burden of U.S. citizenship, they can't do certain things to you on the surface. You have a Social Security card, and you are covered by the Labor Department. So I have to not, I have to pay you a minimum wage. I have to make sure my facilities meet what they call OSHA standards, occupational safety standards. I have to file your taxes. I got to do a lot of stuff. If I'm employing you and you're a citizen, then there's certain, it's going to cost me more. And then because you're a citizen born and raised in the United States, you're going to expect to have certain things. If not a car, you're going to expect to have access to public transit. You're going to expect to be able to live in a house with running water, electricity. You might be going to want a refrigeration and a television, and you're not going to want to live in the house with your uncle, your niece, your cousin, and all their kids, and plus both of your grandparents from you and your wife's side. You don't want to live in a single family, three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bathroom home with 35 other people. You just are greedy like that. You're uppity like that. Whereas immigrants, because they were like, it's not about poverty or wealth, it's life or death. They're easy to exploit. They're not covered by OSHA. They're not even legally able to work here. So they have to work under the radar, which allows employees to do any and everything from underpay, don't pay, to sexually exploit, to kill them. And nobody knows. So if you want to compete, it's what they call a race to the bottom. If you want to be worthy of those jobs, then you have to basically surrender even more of your rights, more of your human dignity, and be willing to be subjected to even more inhumane conditions. And that's why they're taking your jobs. They are being given your jobs by the God of jobs because they are more easily to exploit. So how do you do that? How do you fix that problem? By beating the hell out of the immigrants. No. Because when you beat up on the immigrants, you drive them even further underground, make them even more ripe for exploitation, which grants the employer, who is the true enemy, even more power over them and you, dumbass. So when we see this, and I'm just saying, you don't have to be Trump or some white liberal. You don't have to be liberal or conservative on this issue. You don't have to take one of the two white options on this issue. You can create a third option, because it is also true that when the immigrants get here, because you have different types of immigrants. You have refugees, you have illegal immigrants, and then you have affluent immigrants, professional immigrants, right? You have different types. So number one, the moment you're like, oh, these immigrants coming here. And my ultimate thing on that, because everybody I engaged on this issue, the empathetic, humane, civil, and more intelligent black folks that were like, hey, we can't do this. Oh, and one more thing. Remember Freddie Gray? Remember the Baltimore Police Department? Remember the New York Police Department? Guess where those policemen are going to get their training? They're going to Israel. A lot of black, oh, Palestine, what the Muslims are, Muslims enslaved us. Muslims, yes, they did all that. I'm the main person keep banging on that and keep telling that. That's why a lot of people calling me an Islamophobe. But at the same time, I tell the truth. That's why I got me a couple of pieces of Palestinian candy the other day that I shared with King Dita, because I also understand justice is justice, injustice is injustice. Right? So just like I can recognize Arab colonization, Arab oppression, Arab enslavement of Africans, I can also recognize Zionist genocide against the Palestinians. I can recognize, and guess what? My head didn't just explode. I can know that, hey, there are oppressive institutions and oppressive people. Heck, I can even recognize white oppression of black people and then patriarchy and white patriarchy and sexism against all women, including white women. I can recognize all that and acknowledge all that. Guess what? My head didn't explode. You know, you can be a complex person. You can recognize nuance. You can have empathy for all oppressors and oppressed. You can do all of that. You know, just like you can have a slave master who, I hate niggers. Niggers are bestial. They're animals. They're beasts. But every day you creeping into the shacks to get you a black woman. Which is it? So humans are complex creatures. And as we're very simple in our complexity, and we're very complex in our simplicity and bestiality or bestialness. People are primates. So I don't really want to work with somebody who can't do basic critical thinking. And so I'm glad a lot of black people are self-exposing their unwillingness or inability to think and to create positions or viewpoints that are independent of the propaganda machine, the liberal propaganda machine or the conservative propaganda machine and indoctrination. So, at the same time, we acknowledge Mexico has over 1 million black people there. There are more black people in Central and Latin America than there are in the United States. And the Latino population that comes here are often represents from the upper caste. And they oppress black people where they're from. And we can acknowledge people come here from Asia and other places and come to our community and exploit our community. In fact, everybody know, if you're a new population to the United States, the first place you go is to the hood. And you set up your bodega, you set up your business, you set up your janky, disgusting, bulletproof glass-having restaurant. Living off that cheap Chinese food. He said he only buffs the people when he's in the mood. Some of that rank, disgusting food. And you get paid. That's the stepping stone to the American dream. Yes, you can acknowledge that. But you can also acknowledge that what the U.S. did in Vietnam, in Cambodia, in Palestine, in Honduras, in Panama was wrong, was imperialism. And we oppose U.S. imperialism and we oppose migrant population, refugees in coming into our communities, exploiting us. But then for us to say, wow, how come you go through the hood and it used to be, you know, Vietnamese, bodegas, Chinese immigrant, Mexicans, and other Latin American people are in our community making money, opening businesses, and we're unable to. But guess what? We were vulnerable to this exploitation long before they even got here. Because before it was Asian or Latin merchants exploiting us, giving us substandard services and selling us toxic products and foods. Guess who was there before the Koreans? Jews and Italians and Irish. Black people have always been the stepping stone. We have always, whereas Claude Anderson said, racism holds us in place, why technology steamrolls over us. But if you don't go to the source of the problem, all we're doing is fighting symptoms. Yes, our communities are very vulnerable to outside incursion and for other groups coming into our community getting paid while we can't even sustain ourselves, let alone generate profit among our own people. But if you want to address that, beating the hell out of somebody sitting in a damp cloth on the shores of America, and I'll say this, Black people tripping off and hollering about illegal immigration is no different than a slave being angry about somebody trespassing on the plantation. And that's just the fact. I had some militant Negro talking about bring down the system, and in that same breath, she's talking about, but we got to protect national security. We got to protect national security. Guess what the United States does when it's secure, when it's not fighting Arabs? It's beating the hell out of us. The only reason now we're making headway on the prison industrial complex, mass incarceration, the only reason we're making any headway that because they're so damn distracted chasing Arabs around. What do you think the FBI was doing before it started going and infiltrating mosques? It was infiltrating the Black Panthers with COINTELPRO. Infiltrating not just Black Panthers. You didn't have to be militant. They were infiltrating the Push, Rainbow Push. They were infiltrating the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. They were infiltrating your grandma's knitting club if somebody said something halfway political, expressed some level of discontent with the lynchings, oppression, and poverty in our community. And so they just had to deallocate resources to oppressing us to go fight them. You know? What did press say? They wasn't aiming at us, not at my house. They got the World Trade Pentagon and almost got the White House. Now everybody walking around patriotic. How we gonna fight to keep freedom when we ain't got it? You wanna stop the terrorists? Start with the U.S. imperialists. Ain't no track record like America's. Come on, y'all. So what y'all up here talking about? The ticker jet. I support Trump. Trump, keep them Mexicans out. Trump, keep them terrorist Muslims out. You got brothers that you know, I'm literally, it's cats online, you know, W.D. Muhammad talking about, oh, yeah, Trump needs to, they terrorists. Who you think they coming for? Once they get the so-called national security in order, once they no longer focusing on fake foreign threats, who you think they going, you think they just going to stop? Okay, well, we've defeated terrorism. Did they stop after they defeated communism? Did they stop after they defeated the anarchists, the Huns? They not gonna never stop. They just gonna find, you know. And instead of saying, okay, we got several factions. You know, we have several different various groups and interests here, all vying for power, all trying to get their voices heard, all having contradictory and divergent views. And all we think we can do is, let me find one of this group that I can join with. Let me find one of this group. I'm gonna be communist. Well, I'm going to be capitalist. I'm going to be pro-immigration. Well, I'm going to be anti-immigrant. I'm going to be pro-Muslim. I'm going to be into let them in, kick them out. Let's establish the Black position based on Black interests and based on what we need, what we deserve, and what we're willing to do. Let us at least establish our own independent position. And you can't say it's your own independent position if it doesn't even recognize your historical, political, economic, cultural context. So you can't just embrace Donald Trump's xenophobia and say it's Afro-xenophobia. You know, you just know there's no such thing as Afro-xenophobia. And nobody's railed against African xenophilia more than me. But xenophilia cannot be solved by xenophobia. You know, all I'm saying is be strategic and come up with a Black position. I'm not even going to tell y'all my position on it. I did tell y'all. I wrote it on my blog. So that's why you got it. I'm all over the place, y'all. I write. I talk. You know, I sing, dance, flip pennies. I do a lot of stuff. So, and a lot of times it's weird because I don't know, like, did I write this on my blog? Did I say this on my show? Did I just had say this in conversation with my wife? I don't know when I said what, where. That's why if y'all go to the page, click on donate. I hate shaking the can. Just ain't in my nature. But that's what we got to do. Anyway, I should have thought of something, some positive. I'm going to have to start saying more positive stuff, more inspirational stuff. I think of something. I just found out the Dr. Umar and Sarasuttan Seti conflict did not result in any bloodshed. And, you know, when you got the Prince of Pan-Africanism, when you got a monarch who gets into fight with a general, usually, you know, armies come out. Sorry, sometimes I say silly things. But you know, like I said, you had a five-star general fighting with the prince. You know, so you got an oligarch or a monarch versus a general. But it ended in words being said and some huffing and a little bit of chest thumping. Like I said, we're people are primates. It was some huffing and puffing and chest thumping, and then it has been dissolved. And I'm sure Umar got a little bump, and they both got a little bump in their attention. So I like, don't say I don't say positive things, because I just knew it was going to be, you know, martial law, planes, tanks, and automobiles down the street. But nope, the prince and the general have resolved. And so the imaginary nations that they are monarchs of and the imaginary army that he is the general of have reached us a treaty. So there you have it. So now that the Seti-Umar conflict has been peacefully resolved, all we have to look forward to is the Chris Brown Soulja Boy fight. And whoever, let me give a preemptive shout out to whoever bootlegs that pay-per-view and gets it out to the people for free. A preemptive shout out. Anyway, gotta play the man, the legend, the myth, Robert Nesta Marley. Born in 1945, kind of breaks my heart. He was so young. Man. But I guess, black folks, we just got talented. We just got so many talented icons. But like I said, Bob Marley was more than just a recording artist. You know, he was a true revolutionary. He truly developed, cultivated himself, and he was a threat to our oppressor that they move against. And now I queued the song up before I went on the air, but it don't want to act right. But anyway, get up, stand up. Robert Nesta Marley. Get up, rest in peace. And happy birthday to you.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is on the deer.
Stand up for your rights.
Stand up right now.
Get up, stand up.
self-deceit. Not one of my seeds shall sit in the sidewalks and beg bread.
No, they can't, and you know that they won't.
Self-deceit.
Zimbabwe,
she top in
us apart. In every man chest there beats a heart. So soon we'll find out who is the real revolutionary. And I don't want my people to be tricked by mercenaries. Brother, you're right, you're right.
Yo, I didn't even want to come back on the air, y'all. How am I supposed to follow Robert Nesta Marley? Me can't do it. I've been told that I have to stop with the patois, with the West Indian accent. So that was it. That was my last. Okay, but I still me can't do it. Wow, I can't. I can't. That was Bob Marley, born on this day, February 6th, 1945, and taken from us in, what, 81, 82. Truly legendary, a legend in his own lifetime. But like I said, what's much bigger than just the music, because, I mean, black folks, we just ooze culture. We very creative. We even creative in how we struggle. We even make being oppressed look cool and hip. We even make dysfunction and poverty look desirable. So even though I definitely appreciate, support African artistry, but when we have a creative type who also uses his voice, his skill, his talent, and the immense wealth that can sometimes come with that to arm anti-colonial struggles, to give resources to feed people in need. And not only that, to use his platform to denounce the very system that he stands upon.
We don't care who likes
to commit
this or not.
What's called class suicide, which is the rarest phenomenon in history.
I mean, how much is a lot of money to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Have you made, say, millions of dollars?
No.
Are you a rich man?
What do you mean rich? What do you mean?
You have a lot of possessions? A lot of money in the bank?
Position make you rich? I don't have that type of richness. My richness is life.
Bob, how important is the ganja to arrest the man?
Ganja is a bird. This is herb.
Herb. Does it matter to you that it's still against the law here in Jamaica?
Every law is illegal.
Every law is illegal.
Every government upon the face of this earth today is illegal. Not one of them is legal. Rasta is involved in progress, in making understanding, like preaching traditional culture to people. Rasta no killers. You have to do good before you can be a Rasta.
You have to do good.
If he's baddy, then you're bad. If he's goody, then you're good.
What would I have to do to be a Rastafari?
Well, the first thing you have to be born again.
Born again?
Yeah.
Would I have to be black?
Do you have a choice? If
no,
you have
I
a
don't.
Choice, you better be black if you have a choice. But if you don't have a choice, come as what God said. Yeah, that's right.
Bob, is the message of Rastafari that you should go back to Africa?
Yes, and that the earth must rule by Africa.
Forward.
One government. Forward, not back, forward.
Yeah, go forward to Africa,
yes.
Not back.
Mm-mm.
Do you think that will ever happen? Do you really believe that will happen?
Yeah.
Ghetto youth, tired of the constant political infighting, banded together in a mammoth reggae concert for peace. It ended with Prime Minister Michael Manley and opposition leader Edward Sayaga on stage, shaking hands in an appeal for peace. The man responsible for it all, they say, was Bob Marley. Bob, you've been labeled a powerful political individual. How do you regard that?
Well, I mean, yeah, we was like, we try for Mercury to bring peace, knowing that we really can't solve a problem with a war, you know? It doesn't really solve a problem. You don't feel like really killing someone. But whose problem am I going to solve when I kill someone? You know what I mean? So I figured peace is the best thing. And that's why I go ahead and work with it, because it was a spiritual thing that happened.
But isn't what you need some sort of social, legislative change? The economic conditions are bad. You have a lot of people who are unemployed.
What's really going to happen now is that we don't really want the island to change. We want the world to change.
And his music is how he gets his message across. Rastafarianism is very popular in Jamaica, yet in Canada, the United States, it has a bad reputation. People are associated with drugs and the trafficking of marijuana and violence, police arrests.
Yeah, man, them crucified Christ, remember? Christ was a Christian and them crucified Christ. Same is not what
no,
it is.
No, but let's go back to the facts. People have been arrested, and the Rastafarians in Toronto, for example, have a very bad reputation.
I wouldn't say that the Rastafarians have a bad reputation. I would say people give the Rastafarians bad reputation because the Rastafarians, all of these things happening before the Rastafarians even start coming to Canada anyway around here.
But the things that are very obvious are things like the way you look. Right, to most people who are very conservative in dress, you look quite strange. Plus the fact that you advocate smoking marijuana.
Yeah, you think this. I'll show you this now. Could they tell God that it's not legal?
No, but you're...
They couldn't tell God that it's not legal.
You have a very strong religious belief, but other people don't necessarily share that. And what they see are the obvious things. And isn't it, in fact, true that many Jamaican people get involved in the trafficking of marijuana and therefore get the bad reputation associated with Rastafarians?
People get trafficking. You see, well, really, I don't really know anything about those parts of life. You know, all I know about is Rastafari, you know, and try bringing this truth to the people. What do people do with them life? I don't really know about that. I know about my own.
Okay, what is your own? What's your music to you?
The music to me, the music is more than music to me. It go further than music, you know. It go with I don't know it further than music.
But you used it as a strong message. I mean, words like a hungry man
music
is an angry
it.
Man.
All right. Okay. That's Bob Marley in his own words, having to field questions from these Babylonians, these crazy ball heads and their leading questions. But anyway, I think he's a role model for all artists. And he was a migrant. He was a foreigner. Come to take your jobs. He took jobs away from American singers. Right? I think he was on the tour. Bob Marley was actually on tour with... I think I have to say it was the Commodores or some other type of relatively popular group. And it was his first U.S. tour, and he got kicked off halfway through the tour because he was actually an opening act. And, you know, you got a man singing out there about struggle, about poverty, about African redemption, and then you come out and say, get that funky leg on top. Woo, funky leg. People just wasn't feeling it. So... anyway, he was rescued by, I believe Stevie Wonder put up some money so that he could continue an independent tour when he was kicked off. And that whole history was actually, you know, laid out by Dale Jones, who was a friend. And it's in some details of that whole story in Culture Bandits Volume 1. So it's just a very interesting history. But it's also well documented that he worked with... Zimbabwe, the country that formerly known as Rhodesia, for their anti-colonial struggle, giving resources, helping them to secure weapons for their guerrilla struggle to oust the people. And again, he worked hard with the socialists. Michael Manley was a socialist prime minister. Of course, he was done in by U.S. imperialism. And the reason why you got a lot of Jamaican immigrants and illegal Jamaican immigrants here is because of U.S. imperialism. Every single imperialist state, whether you go all the way back to the Greeks and the Romans, to the British, to the French, every imperialist nation, air quotes, suffers an influx of immigrants from the nation that they've aggressed against. You know, and there's also something that I always have to tell people is that everything you passively allow the empire to do overseas will be returned on you tenfold. So we're allowing the United States to go overseas and steal resources and suppress, incarcerate, assassinate foreign nationals. What do you think the government's going to do to us? Right now, there are police captains, police sergeants, police trainers, and rank-and-file policemen that go to places like Israel, that go to Mexico City. They have these conventions there, and they say this is how you control urban populations that don't have jobs, that don't have food, that don't have money. They're going to take to the streets. They're going to engage and try to, you know, they can't. Your stomach doesn't, you know, work off of a payroll. You're going to be hungry no matter what. And people are not going to watch their children starve. And if they can't get it lawfully, they're going to get it extra legally. And since they can't take billions of dollars and use up billions more dollars in government infrastructure like Bill Gates is to protect his patent, protect his intellectual property, his territory, and his brand, you got to get your own gun and fight against the own interlopers. And even though the corporations have the courts, you know, legal staff, the laws in their favor, they still engage in violence. ExxonMobil is on charges of hiring death squads. Coca-Cola was brought up on charges of hiring death squads and mercenary fighters. So you're not escaping violence by going to college and studying STEM and getting a job with a multinational corporation. You're not exempting yourself from violence. The only thing you're doing is creating a sterilizing distance between you and the violence you live off of. But even in the U.S. jurisprudence, if there's violence being done on your behalf, then you're culpable for that violence. If you're profiting from violence, if you're receiving stolen property, stolen oil, stolen coltan, stolen diamonds for your engagement ring, receiving stolen property makes you as guilty as the person who stole it, as guilty as the corporation. But of course, the criminals who write the laws always exempt themselves from the law. But if you're truly a just and a righteous person, as Bob Marley was talking about, you most definitely would fight those in power. So if you're really mad about immigrants taking your job, and you're an intelligent and moral person, you wouldn't fight the job getters. You go after the job takers. All you got to do is make sure that labor laws are enforced. You can lock up 1,000 immigrants, and that's not going to slow down immigration and immigrants from taking your job. You lock up 2 bosses. You revoke 2 corporate charters. You know, you lock up 3 wealthy white men and their wealthy wives with their undocumented house servants and nannies. I guarantee you that will put more of a dent than your dumbass chasing poor immigrants up and down the street. But it's easier. But I mean, the people who getting the government to enforce immigrant laws mean you have to go. But then here's another thing when you want to pick your battles. Kwame Ture spoke for himself and the All African People's Revolutionary Party. And he stated that the All African Revolutionary Party refuses to fight people without power. Because whenever you engage in a conflict, the first thing in your mind, well, maybe the second thing after how do I engage successfully win this conflict is what is the resolve? Do I stand to gain? 2 people with nothing beating the hell out of each other, even if the winner is still a loser, because you beat somebody who has nothing. What do you gain from beating them? So he said that we will only engage in conflict with those who have power, with those who have resources, with those who have influence. So even on the immigration issue, the number one thing you should want to stop from going across borders unregulated is currency. Just as we're erecting walls, just as the government is erecting walls, just as Trump is erecting walls to human movement, he is tearing down barriers to movement of capital. And the sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds, the free movement of capital across borders is doing more to undermine your well-being, the future for your children, your ability to get a well-paying job and to hold that well-paying job with benefits and health insurance. It's the movement of capital across borders not the movement of desperate people across borders. But then again, when you really start to look at these issues from a radical point of view, it's just easier to scapegoat. It's easier to talk about people who don't have power. It's easier to beat the hell up. That's why, you know, many of our leaders, Umar, like to beat up on single mothers. They like to attack the vulnerable. Trump targeted the vulnerable. Trump's talking about he's going to drain the swamp. Who did Trump tell white people their enemies were? Mexicans, immigrants. Did Trump ever once talk about the oligarchs? Yeah, he could talk about the politicians, but the politicians work for the elites. They are not the elites in most instances.
People from the future are taking all the work away from us decent present-day Americans.
This is how y'all sound.
They took our jobs.
This is how y'all sound.
They took our jobs. They took our jobs.
Like the guard jobs. They took your job.
Yeah. They took my job.
They took your job. Oh, they took our job.
They took your job.
They took your job.
They took your job.
Those goobacks are taking our jobs.
They took our job.
They took our jobs.
Take it there.
Our job.
Take it there.
All right.
They took our job. Come on, you want your jobs back or not?
Yep, that's how y'all sound. I got a secret reality check for black folks. Black folks ain't had full and secure employment since chattel slavery. Since chattel slavery. Do you understand? And before the Mexicans took our jobs, the European immigrants took our jobs, the Southern European immigrants, then Central European, Eastern European immigrants. Our problem is not that our jobs are being took. Our problem is that we live in a state that has made it its priority and its standing position that we are a national security threat. And that we will not be able to legally or illegally, peacefully or violently change our standing, our subordinate status. So our enemy is not immigrants. Our problem is not that they took your jobs. Our issue is that we're under a genocidal system of oppression. And there's no shortcut to liberation. A job is not a stepping stone to liberation. It further entrenches you into the oppression. And I'm not saying quit your job, give up your job. And I'm not even saying don't advocate for black interest in when it comes to, you know, other people and to get our share, our reparations. I'm just saying, do it intelligently. Do it mindfully. Do it strategically. And do it humanely. You know, our role is to build African, independent African statehood. Not to get a good job. And if you got a good job, put the good jobs. I mean, yeah, go on your vacation. Go fishing. You know, buy your iPhone 7, but a significant amount of your resources need to go to the black liberation struggle and black empowerment. If the black folks who already had good jobs had an African consciousness, we wouldn't even have an issue with other people taking their jobs. Our communities wouldn't be vulnerable for infiltration by every other group. Anyway, this is Bro Diallo Show. I see y'all Wednesday morning, AM 1680. Thanks for listening. Peace.